Well, good morning, church.
How many of you ever wondered about what is a good way to talk to my friends about Jesus? Or even if I don't talk to them, at least to introduce the subject of Jesus. And it's kind of difficult to know how to start. It's difficult to know what to say. And so I have a novel idea. Invite your non-Christian friends or your non-church-going friends to a movie. That's how you can do it. And say, our church has rented a movie theater the last Sunday of this month. You don't have to pay if you come to the movie with me. We're going to have more details down the road next week. But right now, I just want to tell you, there's a great way to introduce your friends to Jesus. Telling them the story of Jesus without having to lip one word. 10 years ago, almost exactly, Mel Gibson, The Passion of the Christ, hit movie theaters across America. And can we just go ahead and admit it was a very violent, it was a very bloody, it was a very graphic depiction of the suffering that Jesus went through. Dave Lindsay over here on my left has seen this new Son of God movie. You've seen, maybe some of you have seen the trailers. He says it's not that kind of a movie at all. Not that Jesus didn't endure this, but this is not the movie that emphasizes the gory sacrifice. Rather, this is a movie that emphasizes His goodness, His forgiveness, His love. And so you'd be thinking and even be praying starting right now about who you might want to introduce to Jesus by inviting them to a movie. That's coming up the last Sunday of this month. Now, one other thing I need to say, I'll leave that slide up there for a moment. I was reminded by John Ashton as he walked in this morning that, Dan, you know that sermon you preached about hands 2 weeks ago? In fact, I said that all of us have the same number of hands. We all have two hands, and I asked you all to raise up your two hands. Do you still have those two hands? Would you do that again? Just raise up your two hands, big and tall. We all have two hands. Two hands, and you have a wonderful chance to use them starting next Sunday. Two hands, every one of us. John came to me and he said, Dan, we still need some more hands that will be helpers. We especially need helpers to be here during the host time every evening next week. And we also need helpers to be here during the overnight stay time. So as you leave today, it's going to be a little chaos that goes on, but as you leave, if you would stop and sign up, you've got a very tangible way to use your hands in the next 2 weeks. Sign your name on that list today, and then the next week after that, you'll have a chance to use your hands to be the hands of Jesus Christ as we minister to people who would otherwise be homeless. We're giving them a nice place to stay. We're giving them food. We're giving them opportunity to experience the love of God through this church. I want to talk today about the golden rule. One of the things that I said at the end of last year or early this year is this year, when we're not emphasizing the role of the kingdom, when we're not emphasizing that, I'm going to be emphasizing the life-changing words of Jesus. So today, the life-changing words of Jesus, there they are right there. Treat others the way you want to be treated. We're going to be reading that in just a moment. But before we get there, I want to tell you about the next life-changing words of Jesus that I'm going to be sharing. The next life-changing words of Jesus are, it is more blessed to give than it is to receive. So you'll have to come back in 2 weeks to hear that sermon. But right now, today we're going to be talking about the words of Jesus, treat others the way you want to be treated. Matthew 5, 6, and 7 is where the Sermon on the Mount is found, right? Matthew 5, 6, and 7. Mike Grove shared with Matthew 6 earlier today as we observed the communion. Today, we're in Matthew 7. I'm going to read just a few verses. If you have your Bibles, you might want to keep your finger there because we're going to keep coming back there all day, Matthew chapter 7. This is what Jesus said. The longest, I think, the best sermon ever preached, Matthew chapter 7. Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, in everything, therefore, treat people the way you want them to treat you, for this is the law and the prophets. And then the very next verse says, enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way that is broad that leads to destruction, and there are many who enter in, for the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and few there be that find it. We're going to talk a little bit later about why those three verses all come together. They must be related somehow. They've got to be related. This isn't just a random, oh, okay, here comes these verses. Right after he says, treat others the way you want to be treated, he reminds his audience that there is a narrow gate that leads to eternal life. And I've discovered you've got to be careful in the way you apply this golden rule. I read, actually I did more than read. I had a... If you apply the golden rule, it can really shock your spouse. In marriage, it can really, really shock your spouse. A guy went into a marriage counselor, told his wife had been saying some very demeaning things. She'd been using some ugly words in reference to him. And she said some things that are very, very hurtful. Some things that are very belittling. And I would ask for volunteers to say, how many of you ever heard your wife, or how many of you wives ever heard your husbands do that? And probably, can I tell you, I did it a couple weeks ago. Yeah, your preacher did it. I said some things that were hurtful and belittling to my wife. So the marriage counselor in this story said, well, you just need to start being more attentive to your wife. That's what you need. You need to start treating her with more love. And so one day he comes from home from work early with a dozen red roses in one hand and a box of chocolates in the other. His wife sees him coming in, is totally confused. She meets him at the door and she says, honey, I got a call from school today and Johnny threw up all over school. And on the way home, he threw up in my car. And when I walked in the door, the phone was ringing and it's your mother saying she's coming over for dinner tonight. And now here you are coming home drunk. Whew. Treat others the way you want to be treated. Really, that's what Carlos was talking about last week. When Christ reigns in our home, it affects the way our home works. And we don't always get it right in our home. Philippians chapter 2, verses 4 and 5. Here Paul says, each of you should look out not only for your own interest, but also for the interest of others. Your heart, your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus. So in the home and out of the home, this living the golden rule business is tough. It's really tough. It ain't easy. I want to give you a personal example from this last week. For about the last 3 or 4 years, one of our members, every single Sunday, he leaves a bag of change in the front seat of my car. This is it for this week, right here. Oh. Well, that's never happened before. Kids, you can't come up here afterwards, okay? And for the last about 3 or 4 years, every single Monday, you know, Sunday is my payday, so I go to the bank as quickly as I can get there Monday morning. My bank opens at 9 o'clock. So I walk in there with my paycheck to deposit it, and I take this big bag of change, which I wouldn't even think of sending with Dottie to the bank, because she's the one who usually makes the deposit, because it's just too heavy. And about 2 weeks ago, they said to me, Mr. Cooper, we really have a problem with all this change you're bringing in. Is this change for your use? And I said, no, not really. It's not directly for my use. It's one of our members brings it in. It's for the church. And they said, well, since the church doesn't have an account here, we will count your change, but we're going to have to start charging you to count change. So, whoever said, it's time to change bank, you know what my immediate reaction was? I had been banking at this bank for 29 years. And you're going to count me you're going to charge me $2 to count my change? What's wrong? Are you joking? You know, TD Bank is right down the street and they've got better hours than you do. I didn't say all that, but that's what I wanted to say. I remembered another rule, you know, count to 10 before you do anything you're going to later regret. I haven't had the conversation yet, but I did find a new bank that will count our change. Actually, I did what they said to do. I took it to our bank that I discovered does have, our church's bank that does have a change counting machine. But the point that I'm trying to make is this. The farthest thing from my mind at that moment was doing what was good for them. What I wanted to do was what was good for me. And I wanted to tell them what I thought about them. And they're saying to me, after 29 years of loyalty as a customer, they were going to start charging me $2 to count a bag of change. I wanted to do this. I wanted to do this. I wanted to do this. I wanted to show them. I didn't want to practice the golden rule. I didn't want to do unto others as they'd have them do unto me. So I want to suggest to you, if we're going to practice the golden rule, you need to view the rule positively. And the rule, this golden rule, hasn't historically always been viewed positively. As a matter of fact, in other religions, earlier before Jesus came along, it was viewed negatively. And so Confucius said, do not do unto others what you do not want others to do to you. That's the way Confucius stated the rule. It was a negative statement. And there was a Jewish rabbi who lived about 20 years before Christ came along. And this Jewish rabbi, the story goes, this is about 50 years before Jesus is preaching this sermon. Okay, so 20 years before Christ, the Jewish rabbi, his name, by the way, was Rabbi Hillel, had a debate with a Gentile. That's who most of us are. A Gentile is any non-Jewish person. And the Gentile promised Rabbi Hillel that he would convert to Judaism if he, the rabbi, could teach all of Judaism while he was standing on one foot. That was the challenge. I will convert to Judaism if you can teach me Judaism while you're standing on one foot. Rabbi Hillel capsulized Judaism in 20 BC, do not do to your fellow what you hate to have done for you. This is the whole law, and the rest is explanation. Well, the Jewish mind captured that, and it circulated. And so along comes Jesus about 30 AD, and as you're trying to capsulize the whole law, this would have been well known. This would have been well circulated about how the Jewish rabbi kind of put this Gentile in his place. The incident would have been legendary, very much like the statement that was spoken about 50 years ago by one of our presidents. About 50 years ago, it was John F. Kennedy in his inaugural address who said, ask not what your country can do for you, ask rather what you can do for your country. In many circles, it seems that that line today is, ask not what you can do for your country. This age of entitlement is, ask rather what your country can do for you. And so we can easily see the impact of what the person is saying because of the familiarity that he is making. They would have all known this statement that Rabbi Hillel had shared. And so Jesus is standing there on the mountain, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, preaching this sermon. And there is a big difference that from what they're used to hearing. Do not do to others what you want have done to you, and don't do to others what they would do to you. And his hearers could not have possibly missed the point. If you don't see the difference between the two, maybe I can illustrate it with a true story. Not a true story, but an imaginary story. Let's say someone is born in a coma. And for the sake of illustration, we're going to say that this person lives in a coma their entire life. They never become conscious. I don't even know if that's medically possible. But say for the sake of illustration, they're born in a coma, live their entire life in a coma, and then they die. At the person's funeral, someone might stand up and say, "What a great man. He never stole. He never lied. He never lusted. He never committed adultery. He never one time lashed out in anger. Never once." And all that would be very true because of all the things he didn't do. But another person might come along and say, "Sure, but on the other hand, he never gave sacrificially. He never one time complimented another person. He never offered someone a shoulder to cry on. He never ever said thank you, not even one time." And all that would be true. A person in a coma has a pretty good excuse for inactivity. But we have no excuse, particularly when we remember the words of Jesus: "Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Treat others the way you want them to be treated." The rule, that kind of rule, the one that the rabbi introduced, can be obeyed by simply vegging out, sitting still, and doing nothing. Lacks any fortitude to bring a change about the world, but positively stated, the way our Lord stated it, "Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you." This requires a pulse. This requires a decision. It requires a conscious, dedicated effort. It requires action. This is countercultural. I'm going to move outside of my zone. I'm going to be active. I'm going to be revolutionary. If our rule is don't do to others what we hate, we neglect doing for them what we love. So Jesus says, look beyond the negative form of the rule. Look beyond that. There's no glory in observing that alone. Be positive in your approach to godliness. Do unto others what you would want done. View the rule positively. And so, what does it look like in the 21st century America? That's my question. What does it look like if we 21st century America? Well, here it is. I had to think about this. One, I'm driving down a busy highway, and some jerk passes me on the right. Just in front of me, his lane ends. That means I slow down, touch my brake pedal, smile, and motion him or her to come in. That's what that means in 21st century America. That means after this coming Sunday, the fifth Sunday meal, the last Sunday of this month, after we're scurrying around sharing a meal together, that means 4 weeks from today, if I'm going to do for others what I want them to bring, I'm going to stay around a little bit extra time and I say, "Can I help with the cleanup today?" That's what that means if I'm going to treat others. That means when I'm home, and I don't know about any of you, but my laundry basket gets full every once in a while. When I'm home and the laundry basket is full to overflowing, that means I throw a couple loads in the washer with the colors appropriately separated between whites and dark. And by the way, this works for teenagers too. And I make sure the temperature is set to the right temperature, hot for hot and cold for cold. And I run the cycle. And then I run back down after the cycle is done, and I take the clothes out of the washer and put them in the dryer, being certain that I take the sweaters out first because I don't want them to shrink. That means in 21st century America, at bedtime, when I go into the kitchen and prepare my late night snack, I don't leave the crumbs on the counter. As a matter of fact, I clean the crumbs up and I put my dishes in the dishwasher, and then I fill the dishwasher with a laundry detergent or dishwasher detergent, and I push that little start button. And then the next morning, I get up before my wife and I empty the dishwasher and put the dishes into the cabinets. That's what that means in 21st century America. That means when it snows, I clean off my car and I clean off my wife's car, and I don't complain. And you're going to have a chance to practice this tonight and tomorrow. That means when someone is talking to me, I really listen to them. And I say, did I hear you right? And then I restate what I think I just heard them say. That means I give people the benefit of the doubt because I have no idea the big, hard stuff that's going on in their life right now. That means when a friend calls and says, hey, can we do breakfast today? I respond by saying, right now? Yeah, right now. I say, okay, where are we going to meet? That means, and here's one from this week for me. When my wife comes home and she's been shopping and she says, hey, you want to see the new clothes I bought? I say, sure, honey, let me see them all. She wants to show them off, and so I say, okay, let's see them. The punchline is treating people in the 21st century requires action. It requires a decision to get involved. It's more than just don't treat other people the way you don't want them to treat you. It is do treat others the way you want to be treated. And so the assignment is today, and some of you have already had this, and some of you don't have yet. You're going to have that opportunity this week. In the next 7 days, I've got a couple of these right here. They're samples. You've got them right in front of you. And so your assignment in the next 7 days is going to be, the brothers are coming around if you haven't already gotten one. You're going to have this chance with two of these cards. You say, I really don't know what she wants. I don't know what my son wants. I don't know what my daughter wants. Or I don't know what my parents want. Teenagers, listen to me. You want to honor your parents by giving yourself the chance to practice the golden rule to treat other people the same way you want to be treated. And so you're going to write down today and put today's date, whatever it is. It could start today. It could start tomorrow. My aim is to do what you ask, to do it with a good attitude because I want to honor Jesus. So often when I preached a sermon, and Carlos and I have talked about this a couple times, you know, you can preach a lot of truth, but if it doesn't impact a decision, if it doesn't impact a life this week, then maybe it's all true, but the story of the Bible is supposed to change people's lives. It's supposed to change what happens in their daily routine. And so here is a chance, and my challenge is this. Do this once to a family member and once to somebody who isn't a family member. Maybe somebody in your apartment complex, Anita. Maybe somebody at work, wherever you work, to say, hey, I have a proposal. I'm going to be very, very serious about taking the words of Jesus. I want to treat you the way you want to be treated. And just in case I don't know, I want you to tell me what you want. Rule number one, then, is view the teaching positively. And the rule number two is to follow the teaching daily. Anybody else not receive two of those? We want to be sure everybody's got one. Everybody got one? Great. Okay, thank you, guys. This principle must guard our lives every day if we're going to be 100% sold out to Christ. That's the challenge. Not just don't do what you don't think they want done, but do what you think they do want done. Think about it. Let me read you an email that circulated some about 10 years ago, and I just came across it again that may illustrate what we're looking to. Everyone in the apartment complex where I lived knew who ugly was. Oh, this may not literally be a picture of ugly, but that's a general idea. Ugly was the resident tomcat. Ugly loved three things in the world: fighting with other tomcats, eating garbage, and, shall we say, love. The combination of these things combined with a life spent outside had their effect on Ugly. To start with, he had only one eye, Where the other eye should have been, there was a hole, a gaping hole. He was also missing one ear on the same side as the eye was missing. His left foot appeared to have been badly broken at one time. It had healed in an unnatural angle, making him look like he was always about to turn around a corner. His tail had long since been lost, leaving only a short little stub, which he would constantly jerk and twitch. Ugly had ugly sores covering his head and neck and even his shoulders with thick yellow scabs. Every time someone saw Ugly, there was the same reaction, "That sure is an ugly cat." Children were warned not to touch him. Many adults threw rocks at him, or they would hose him down if he tried to come into their home. Ugly always had the same reaction. If you turned your hose on him, he would stand there getting soaked until you gave up and just quit. If you threw things at him, he would curl up his ugly body around your feet. Whenever he spied children, he would come running, meowing frantically, and rub his head against their legs, begging for their love. If you ever picked him up, he would immediately begin suckling on your shirt or your earring, whatever he could find. He just needed love. One day, Ugly shared his love with his neighbor's huskies. They did not respond kindly. And Ugly was mauled. From my apartment, I could hear his screams. And I tried to rush to his aid. By the time I got there, he was laying. It was apparent that Ugly's sad life was almost at an end. Ugly lay in a wet circle, his back legs and his lower body twisted grossly out of shape, a gaping tear in his strip of fur that ran down his front. As I picked him up and I tried to carry him home, I could hear him wheezing and gasping and could feel him struggling. I must be hurting him terribly, I thought. Then I felt that familiar tugging, sucking sensation of all things on my ear. Ugly, in so much pain, suffering, and obviously dying, was trying to suckle my ear. I pulled him closer to me, and he bumped the palm of my hand with his head. And then he turned his one golden eye toward me, and I could hear the distinct sound of his purring. Even his greatest pain, that ugly, battle-scarred cat, was asking for a little affection, some compassion. At that moment, I thought Ugly was the most beautiful, loving creature I had ever seen. Never once did he try to bite me, or scratch me, or struggle to get away from me. Ugly just looked up at me, completely trusting in me to relieve his pain. Ugly died in my arms before I could get him inside. But I sat and held him a long time afterwards, thinking about how one scarred, deformed, little stray cat could so alter my opinion about what it means to have true pureness, to love so totally. Ugly taught me about giving and compassion. He taught me more than 1,000 books or lectures could, or talk shows. He taught me more than they ever could. He had been so scarred on the outside, but I was scarred on the inside. And it was time for me to move on and to learn to love deeply like Ugly loved. To give my unconditional love. Many people want to be richer, more successful, well-liked, beautiful. But for me, I just always want to be more like Ugly. Even in our pain, it is possible to give others what we would like to have them give to us. To do for them what we'd like them do for us. That's what Ugly did. He did to others what he wanted done to himself. Ugly's actions changed the heart of a person who needed to show greater love. Jesus knows that we can change the world. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Don't wait for them to do something good for you. Take the initiative. You want to be forgiven? Forgive daily. You feel need for affirmation? Affirm others daily. You feel hurt, wounded, broken, and you could stand a gentle touch? Be gentle in your touch with others daily. You appreciate tact?
be tactful daily. You'll enjoy a compliment. Compliment others daily. This golden rule will transform our actions when we get serious. I didn't give you 7 of those sheets because I'm afraid if we are going to be serious about applying the golden rule every day, it's going to be such a dramatic transformation in our lives. I'm not sure any of us could do it 7 days straight. If we did it, we would never be mean. We would always be generous. We would never be harsh. We would always be understanding. We would never be cruel. We would always be kind. I'd love to love like that, wouldn't you? Sound impossible? Well, it is impossible without the grace of God. In the storyline of the movie Pay It Forward, people first needed to see somebody else. They needed to experience somebody else being generous before they learned how to do it. And you know what? That's what Jesus did for you and me. God sent Jesus to die for us. To do something for us that we couldn't do for ourselves. Jesus became our ugly. He was the one that endured our pain, our persecution. He is the one that demonstrated that ultimate love to us. And He says, I want you to play it forward. I want you to do to others what I've done for you. So He went to the cross. He sacrificed for us. He loved us when we were unlovely. The assignment for the week, pick 2 people for a 24-hour period. One family, one non-family. Treat people the way you want them to treat you. And second, remember that Jesus became our ugly. He is the one that endured our persecution. He is the one that endured our suffering, our humiliation. He is the one who endured our fights. He went to the cross on our behalf. We're going to sing an invitation song. And as we sing the song, it's called, I Have Decided to Follow Jesus. And if you are here today and you would like to make that decision, together as we stand and sing, will you come and share your need with us?